So you need to take consistent action every single day and don't let that faith go away, because you'll feel like you're not gaining ground day over day. As time goes on, I guarantee you, it will come true. It just takes longer than you think it's going
to
take.
Hello and welcome back to Multifamily Strategy. I am Christian, your host, joined today by Tommy Haar. Tommy, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, man. It's going to be an honor.
Oh, I do. I've been excited about this for a little while. So you are out of Ohio. I just got to learn a little of your backstory as we were talking here over the last few minutes. But this, I think this is going to be a fantastic episode. Excited for what you have to share here. Tommy, talk to us a little bit about where you're at in real estate today and where you got started.
Yeah, so I'm 29 years old. I'm in Columbus, Ohio, born and raised. So I got dropped here and never really left. So didn't really specify, pick this market. It just kind of happened. I started out as a home inspector. So fast forward now, 7 years, me and a business partner. Now we own about 85, 90 units as of tomorrow. We're wholesaling about 10-ish houses a month, and we're flipping about 10 to 15 houses at a time as well. So fully integrated business vertically. But it all started as becoming a home inspector with my dad. So my dad has been a home inspector for 24 years now. He bought a franchise when I was young, and I'm one of five kids. So that was his, he had to become an entrepreneur to take care of our family. So he kind of made the leap when we were really young, and it's worked out. So I became a home inspector after I graduated college and basically was his right-hand man for a couple of years.
So, wow. Okay. There's a ton to unpack there. Home inspector, did he also invest in properties at the time, or are you the first one to start buying rentals in your family?
So I'm the first one to own rentals. So my parents had they had one house they flipped with my aunt and uncle, but never really like as a business. It was more of like a quick hobby and everybody kind of hears about it. So it was never talked about. I never even knew they did that until a couple of years ago. But my dad had the inspection business, and in that middle time, so 07 was when this other business started. He started a property preservation company, and that's really the business I grew up in. So I don't know. How old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay.
So I'm the old man here.
Okay. Well, we didn't see a lot of this because we were younger, but when the market crashed, when all the houses were in foreclosure, that was a big business working for those banks. So my dad had about 60 employees at one point, trashing out houses, boarding up the houses, winterizing them, changing the locks. So I grew up kind of trashing out houses from the time I was like 12, 13, bring in older soccer guys. I played sports, older guys that had cars. We'd go drive and trash out houses and mow lawns. So that was my kind of intro to real estate.
Awesome. Now, the things that you buy today, you started with single family. Do you still buy a lot of single family? Are you branching into multifamily? What does the portfolio look like?
So most of our stuff is single family just out of like, I'm not gonna say necessity, but it's the low hanging fruit just because our wholesaling business is mostly single family, because those are the sellers that maybe are more motivated, and you can do more deals, I would say, wheeling and dealing in the single family space. So we started just picking off the best ones as we started to grow our wholesaling company.
Awesome. And is that how the funnel looks? Yeah, you look to acquire if you can, if it's not something you're gonna acquire wholesale, if it's a project you want to take on, flip. How do you determine? I'm kind of a one trick pony. Like, I'll do two flips. Usually I do 2 to 3 flips a year, but they'll be commercial 30 unit plus. Like,
that's,
I have
cool,
a few large projects, but I don't do a lot of flipping. I basically buy multifamily. That's my business. How do you determine what's a wholesale, what's a flip, what's a hold? Talk to me how the business works.
Yeah, so we have about 10 people on staff, Americans on staff in here in Columbus, Ohio, in our office. So with that comes overhead. So wholesaling, we have to make enough money actively to keep the doors open and run business operations, you know? So in a perfect world, if I had $10 million in my bank account, I would probably try and keep everything and do the Burr method. But I'm 29. I started this business from the ground up with my business partner, and we don't have outside capital really like that to, for operations. Now, for private money, we do, but for operations. So we wholesale enough to be comfortable, and then we keep the other stuff. So right now, the way the business works is you have the wholesale, the flip, and the rental stuff. Our wholesale, we're mostly wholesaling what we bring in, unless it's just a screaming deal. And we're doing direct to seller stuff. So cold call and texting. We have two acquisitions guys. We just brought on another acquisition who's going to be B2B, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then dispo. They only get paid unless you wholesale. So we're now doing more deals with wholesalers and realtors and then things. So we're bringing in deals from our business to business relationships for the rental and the flipping side of the business more.
Awesome. And we don't have a ton of wholesalers on there. We talked to a lot of people who, a lot of people flip, and that will happen a good deal. A lot of people who've built large portfolios. Talk to us a little bit about the wholesale business. Is that something that you're really enjoying doing? I know it keeps the lights on, but give me the 30,000-foot view on how you got started in wholesaling and how that supports your business operations.
So wholesaling for me was out of necessity, So I was 23 years old, living in my parents' basement still, trying to figure out how to make more money. My dad was paying me $32,000 a year as a home inspector. It wasn't anything sexy. It wasn't cool. So I started listening to Bigger Pockets, and I was like, "So you're telling me that I can not own a house and make 10, 20, 30, 40 grand? I'm in. Whatever I got to do, I'm gonna do it." So that's kind of been the backbone of our get out of what I'm doing now thing. So it was to kind of figure everything out, and then as time has gone on, everything starts and ends with a deal, So if you're the person with the deals, you're always going to have a business. So we just pick off the best ones for rentals now, and that's how we scaled our portfolio in 2021 into 22 was we just kind of switched the exit from wholesale, because wholesaling is just an exit strategy, We just switched it from wholesaling to Burr Method rental, and that's really just what we turned it to.
That's amazing. So that portfolio it's mostly single family house.
So it's mostly single. So Columbus, Ohio has a lot of duplexes. So a decent amount of duplexes, a couple, a 3 unit in there. I've got an 8 unit. We're buying a 9 unit tomorrow, and a couple commercial properties that kind of fell into our lap in our marketing. But most of it comes, we don't really seek out big multifamily. It's more bundling single family on portfolio loans and one-off deals.
Oh, dude, that's incredible. So you're basically you're the duplex king of Ohio. That's what I'm hearing here.
Man, there's a lot of duplexes. Duplexes are good and they're bad. I mean, you hear about the cash flow, but they're a little harder to rent. People don't love being on top of each other. I mean, that's kind of the multifamily thing, So I like sprinkling in single to multi for scattered site appreciation. Now it is harder to manage. We manage in-house as well, so we do pretty much all of it.
How are you finding deals? I mean, that's a lot of volume. You're doing wholesales, you're doing flips, you're buying stuff. I mean, that's just a lot of overall volume. You're running a 10-person staff. What is your primary method of finding opportunities?
Yeah, so our direct to seller methods are cold calling and texting. So that's our marketing. We cold call, we text overseas cold callers. We have 5 cold callers that call for us around the clock, and I have a virtual assistant on staff that texts. And then when that lead comes in, it goes to our acquisition managers, and they're basically working on follow up. They're following up every single day with their warm leads, trying to lock stuff up in contract. And then the other side is me. Now we brought somebody on to kind of be me, but me being on social media, hosting events, doing all that stuff, that drives lead flow as well. So, like I said in the beginning, wholesaling, we're mostly exiting as a wholesale right now, and then bringing in from me and now we're calling it our JV department, bringing those deals in to capitalize and grow the business. But right now, deals are kind of the bottleneck of our business.
This is interesting. You have the opposite method that I do of buying deals. And this is what I love about this podcast. This is what I love about real estate. There's a million ways to play the game, and all of them work. This is the volume and marketing game. You have systems and processes and people to keep the deals going, to make the calls, to run through the volume. And there's two ways to play it. It's kind of a quantity quality approach. What I did in my business is I meet owners who've done what I want to do. I do an average of one meeting per week. So in the course of a year, I meet 52 owners in my market. That has been the method that has yielded the most opportunity for me with the least amount of calls. The other way you do this is you build systems. What I think everyone should try to avoid, and I really believe this, is creating a crappy job for themselves. And so many people are like, "Oh yeah, no, I just sit on the phone all day, 500 calls, multi-dialer system." You've done the thing where it's like, okay, high volume, but you added systems around it, and you've come up with a way to support the overhead to do that. That is what we call building a business. There's a million ways to take this out. I'm loving everything about this, though. You've solved for X. How do I optimize my time? You're doing the thing that you're best at, but you have a method where you're like, hey, I know how to make leads appear doing this. Let's add systems and processes. And in your case, it's VAs and it's employees. I like this business. What's your why behind this? I mean, by getting all the rentals, because you don't have to scale to 90, right? Your dad had a business. You understand the inner workings of business. Most people can live on doing like a flip a month, right? So for you, why did you get into this and why scale the business? Business is hard.
Yeah, it is hard. It's always a little bit of ego. You want to do big things. You want to do things that maybe your family has not. And then also it's family. So being like you said, my dad had a business, but it was a hamster wheel business. Like being a home inspector, it was me and him. We would get up in the morning. When I was a kid, I'm one of five kids. So I'm one of five kids. I'm the oldest boy. Man, I would wake up. I would come home in college sometimes, like drinking out with my buddies, maybe 3, 4 a.m. And he would be up getting to work. So like he spent his whole life working his ass off. And I'm like, man, there's got to be a better way. So when I joined his business, that it was all over the place. There was no systems. There was no operations. He was handling all the phone calls. So I just started to go to meetups. I started to go to workshops. I started to go to these things that would teach me how to run a business. So we got a call center. We got all these things. So now it's about, okay, how can we like prove to my family that there's better ways to do business? You can still make the same amount of money, but work less. that's a real thing. And I didn't realize it until I started getting around higher level people and they kind of tell you what they know.
How much work do you have to put in on the front end to be able to work less?
A ton. I mean, I still work a ton, you know, so it's a give and take, but knowing I have a kid coming in 3 months. So my wife is 7-ish months pregnant. So working our ass off to build systems and processes, the rentals, to be able at one point, if we want, that's a big if, to slow it down. I mean, some people never do. Some people do. You never know when priorities may change. So that's kind of having options is really the big thing for me.
That's exciting. This is your first kid?
First kid.
Dude, I've talked to three people this morning, all three pregnant with their first kid. This is awesome. The theme of the day. life changes. And that's, that is what you want to do eventually. For most people, you want to own your time. I have found as a competitive entrepreneur, I have no idea how to do that. I work every second.
Same.
Definitely a perfect example of I would rather work 24/7 than 9 to 5.
Absolutely.
Building something is extremely fun, but at some point you build it to a point where theoretically, I haven't got here yet, but theoretically you can lay off the gas at some point a little bit and spend some time doing something else.
Absolutely.
Spend that time with your family. And I imagine it's probably around the time you have kids. Take a little second to decelerate for a second, get your bearings, and then push off the next goal. Speaking of, 100%. What is the overall goal? You mentioned, you know, there's a little ego in it. You want to get competitive. You've scaled a pretty impressive portfolio and you're still sub 30, which is a huge congratulations for you. I got started at 29, by the way. Like I had owned a single family rental, but 29 is when I started first duplex, second duplex.
Awesome.
You're a heck of a lot farther than I was at your age. You're about double the portfolio that I made it to by the end of 29. And you have a heck of a lot of this year to keep going. When's your birthday, by the way? How long do we have in your 20s?
August 11th is my birthday, so I'm about halfway there.
Okay. So you will absolutely 100% be safely over 100 units by 30 years old. There's no way. There's no way you don't make that. That's exciting. What is the goal for the company? Like, what are you trying to build to?
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is always a moving target, you know? I mean, everybody has the vanity metrics of 100 units, 1,000 units, 500 units, whatever it is. It kind of just goes back to, as we build a team, like, are we building careers for people? Are we building a big enough business where people's dreams can fit in within our dreams? So, like, our dreams need to be so big that they can, like, literally build a career within here. They can buy rental properties, they can flip some houses, and they can build something that's great. And that's really kind of what the goal is with the business now. So we're going to grow it. We're going to see where it takes us. But I'd be lying if I said a specific number because we take it 90 days out.
There we go. I like having some direction. You know, you have your 90-day plan. I'm an over-planner. Even though I do a lot of the integrations, I am at heart more of a visionary than I think I am an integrator. So when I'm looking at something, like, I love sitting with my wife almost daily. I mean, like, where do we want to be, you know, 90 days, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, where are we headed? I'm going to have to do that actually pretty soon. I'm about to move to Texas. My goal is to retire my wife from teaching and build the house. The house is done in like 2 months.
It's amazing.
I need to go get me some new goals.
What kind of teaching?
She was teaching kindergarten right through COVID in Washington State. If you know anything about Seattle politics, no good. No good. We'll say this. There's a reason I'm moving to Texas.
Yeah, it takes a special person to be a teacher, let alone somebody that can deal with stuff like that, you know? So my mom was a teacher for 30 years, so there's always a special thing in my heart for teachers.
It is a brutal job, dude. That is a very, very hard job. My wife's amazing, and she came right out of that and was like, okay, I'm an entrepreneur now. What she's done to our companies, coming into the companies, just absolutely amazing. I'm not a detail-oriented person. Bringing that into the company was extremely valuable. What does deal structure look like for you? We've had people on the channel who are syndicators. Not many, but we do have a few.
Yep.
We've had people who are like, they just buy the deals themselves on 30-year fixed rate debt. We have people who do a lot of joint venture. Myself, I do a good deal of joint venture. What is your most common deal structure when you're buying these? Are you owning 50% of the deal, 80% of the deal, 20% of the deal? What does it look like?
So me and my business partner are 100% owner of our portfolio. We don't have any partners.
There we go.
I raise private money. So like the cool thing about these deals are in Columbus, I mean, the purchase prices are not that high. They're getting a little bit higher now, but what I'm really good at is raising capital. So coming from a home inspection background, and we find really good deals, you know, so being able to leverage other people's money and do it properly and have something to back it with is the recipe for scale. So we're raising private money. We're basically doing the Burr method on everything. So for example, tomorrow we're buying a 9-unit. We're buying it for $401,000. It's 8,300 square foot. We're going to put probably 400 into it. It's going to be 1.2 when it's done. We'll probably pay 75 grand of interest. I'm going to refi out of a 75, 80% LTV with either a community bank or a DSCR lender and have very little or no money of our own in that deal. We'll own it 100%.
There we go. That has the stamp of approval. The more of your property you can own as a group, and I understand having a core partner, but you guys owning it, so you're structuring everything as debt. Like you have one partner, but everything is structured deal. We always do this order whenever I buy anything: deal, then debt, then equity. I want as few partners as possible. I take out some projects, especially on the heavier value add, where we just can't support negative cash flow while going through the project because we do so much heavy value add on mid-size multifamily. Yeah. I end up using some equity partners. I end up owning about 33% of the LLC pretty often. That seems to be the amount where it's me, my business partner, Cody Davis, or another partner. I partnered with a friend, Caleb Hommel in Texas, where we have a pretty similar structure.
Nice.
But if you can own all this stuff without people, the goal for me is eliminate variables. When you're doing this, so I buy long-term cash flowing fixed rate debt. That's the metric. And in Ohio, at the prices you're buying at, I'm guessing the cash flowing part is probably not the struggle. When you're going through this, what sort of debt products are you acquiring with, and how long before you migrate through the Burr? Like on an average cycle, what is the target and where are you getting the, I assume it's either hard money or bridge money. How are you putting it together?
Yeah. So we're putting it together on the back end. So a lot of our stuff, so to kind of break it down, I flip real estate and I built my flipping business to be able to build a construction company that can churn and burn houses. And we just changed the exit strategy, you know? So like in a perfect world, I wouldn't flip any of them. I would just keep them. But in order to do that at scale, especially on a single family to a small multi, is you have to have a construction company almost. So we're churning and burning these houses. So for example, we just did a deal. It took us probably 4 months. So we bought a duplex. We got squatters out of it. Took us 2 more months to renovate it. We bought it for 80. Put 90 into it. We're all in 170, about 10 grand of interest. It appraised for 225. I got DSCR debt on that. So A lot of the stuff we're doing right now is we're doing interest-only options on those because we're not really paying that much principal anyway. And then in a perfect world, I'm going to take my portfolio or bits and pieces of it of properties that are like and probably refinance with commercial debt 2025 year AM to where I just get just people that are servicing it. I can call them less points, less like just nastiness. So we're using DSCR right now as a just kind of a stepping stone to capture the equity, make sure that we get it onto debt, we stabilize it, knowing that in a 1 to 3 to 5 year time horizon, we're going to refi it into something better.
It's a good strategy. As long as you have a path to get there, that's the one thing. It's like not every deal you can just close on long-term debt. There's often a path from A to B. There's a game plan though for, hey, I'm going to buy this, then I'm going to get my money back out of it. And we're going to put it in a longer term debt product. I love it. What's the thing that you feel that you are the best in the world at? What and how has that helped you grow your business? Because I've noticed there's usually one or two things that people are like, you know what, this, there's things that the team's good at, but then there's the one thing that you're like, hey, I'm a freak at doing this one thing. And that's what makes people stand out. You're 29, you have a sizable portfolio. What's that thing?
Yeah, I would say there's like there'd be two things. One's tangible, one's not really as much. One's being a leader. So being a leader, leading from the front, doing what you say and being super consistent. So that all to me is leadership. So doing what you say you're going to do, leading the way. I'm not a very good manager. So day-to-day management of people, I'm not an integrator. I just know I'm not. But I know like it's just something that's always been in me. I came from a sports background. It just was kind of always the way that I've been. And I'm really good at numbers. So I'm definitely a numbers guy too. So like I said, my mom was a math teacher for 30 years. And I kind of got both of those things. So now we teach real estate and I'm a math guy. So it's just something that's always clicked with me.
Love it. With those pieces, with being a leader and being great at math, how has that directly impacted your business? I mean, we can imagine with the math, you know, you can do
Sure.
deals and you can figure them out, but what does that look like tangibly in your business?
Yeah, so like if you're wholesaling real estate, like single family, being able to know you've got a deal, like let's say we have a house on well and septic. A lot of investors don't like well and septic, but we all feel like it's a good deal. I'm willing to be a leader in the company and say, we're gonna buy that even if somebody else says it's not, because we all believe it. Like I'm willing to put our money where our mouth is. Let's buy it, let's do it, and let's either fail or let's go forward. So being able to pull the trigger on things, like not waver in like our capabilities. That stuff has been a massive impact on our business. And then leading from the front, putting myself on social media years ago has just exploded the business. It's all kind of coming to fruition now. I mean, it's been growing well, but it takes somebody that has, for lack of better terms, some balls to get on the internet, look at themselves, listen to them speak online, even if you hate it, and just do it because you know the outcome is going to be good.
And the thing that I heard there repeatedly through that is you have the courage to move forward. I think that is the number one thing people get stuck on. There's people who can do the math, who can put together the teams, they have the skill sets, and instead of buying things, like buy that property, you go out and you buy another mentorship program, or you buy another book, or you listen to another podcast. There is I've noticed that in Multifamily Strategy, my mentorship group. We have seen this happen so many times. The people who transact are the people who can put together the money and write the check. There's nothing that difficult in business. Like, it's not easy in the real estate business, but it is very simple. When people are trying to learn how to do this, there's just a certain type of person that just can't pull the trigger. What I'm hearing here is, as a leader, you can look at a project and say, yes, there are things we're going to have to overcome. Yes, there are some unknowns or variables. And we believe in the project and we're going to sign the paper and you get it done and look at where you're at today. Another thing we find in business, you don't know what you don't know when you get started. And starting a business is expensive. We have made seven figure mistakes. I've made six figure mistakes. Sometimes you stumble forward, sometimes you have huge setbacks. When you are learning how to go into business, build these teams, you have a lot of facets to your business. What was the highest stupid tax you paid? That price for learning what you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, the first flip I ever did, so I was 6 months out of college learning to be a home inspector. Me and my uncle partnered up. He put me on a bigger pockets. He taught me, he gave me Rich Dad Poor Dad. He wanted to be my business partner or vice versa. We bought our first flip, and within the next 16 months of owning that thing, we lost 100 grand on that house. So the stupid tax was jumping into a deal that was probably not a good deal, not really knowing exactly what we're doing. But you're never going to know exactly what you're doing, but you got to keep it more simple. We bought a 4,000 square foot house, 6 bedroom, 5 baths in a very nice area. And I just wish like somebody would have been like, don't buy that. That's not a good first deal, you know? Got buy something more basic.
Were there any red flags through that deal where you were like, maybe I shouldn't do this, but you bought it anyway? Or did you just really not know?
Not monetarily as much, but like contracting wise, like we were not tight on the scope of work. We hired a contractor that like sent us the deal. So I felt indebted to him in a sense. He said he was a GC and he was like a two-man show, 4,000 square foot house. So it just took forever. Change orders like crazy, nickel and diming. Kind of got taken advantage of not knowing the process. So on paper, it looked like a decent deal, but it took too long. It sat on a main road and comps in the around in the next cul-de-sac, like probably throw a stone over there. We're selling for $850,900, but they weren't on a main road right in front of a stoplight.
Ah. So it's the little locational thing. It's not even like the area is bad. It's the wrong street in the right neighborhood sort of deal.
Yep. Yep.
If you were starting again, how would you have avoided this mistake?
I would have just bought a 3-bed, 1-bath, 1,000 square foot in an area that only has 3-bed, 1-bath, 1,000 square foot that needed paint, carpet, windows, maybe a roof, maybe a furnace, and just got in and out in 3 months. Made very little, but or some, or even lost, but not like something super discouraging like that one.
So that was your first one ever. How did you go through that at a loss? And then your takeaway being, you know what we need to do? Do this more. Again better. Like a lot of people would be like, this sucks. I'm out. What is it in you that said, hey, I love this pain. Let's do this again and get better.
You kind of said it earlier, man. I mean, you got to take action. You got to accept that there's going to be failures along the way. So some of the best entrepreneurs that I know are just kind of quite simply like dumb enough to keep going. So I was dumb enough to keep going, and I just had listened. I was inspecting houses that entire time. So I was about 2 years into inspecting houses. I was 24 now, and 23, 24. And I had just heard so many success stories. Like you hear 400 Bigger Pockets podcasts of like these people doing well. It's like, okay, this is real. I know it's real. I've heard these people. I just can't let this one mistake deter me from really doing this, you know? So I just got back at it, moved back in with my parents for a little while and flipped another house, made some money, and then house hacked and then house hacked again and just started building my business that way.
Yeah, I love the tenacity. For those wondering, this is the mindset that you need to have if you're going to be successful in real estate. You just have to have the ability to push forward because stuff gets expensive. I think your most expensive thing, correct me if I'm wrong, from your experience, I have found the most expensive things to me are usually taking too long to get through the project. It's the holding time in a vacant unit where you're not bringing in income on something you could. If you're starting like me or like you with less or no money, you don't always have the capital just right there in front of you to fix the problem. I found the most expensive thing that I did early in my career that I really should have worked on is I took too long to get through renovations because I was waiting for cash flow to knock it out. I should have just raised the capital and fixed the vacancy. Like the most expensive thing especially when you're learning stuff, is everything costs 3 times as much and takes 3 times as long. And it's that time where it's like, oh my gosh, we're bleeding. And it's perpetual, like it's not getting better. Those are the things where it's like, ooh, you have vacancy or you have a project and you're getting stuck. That is where you just absolutely lose the margin on a deal.
Absolutely.
What have you done to cut down on time? I know you said you really honed in the construction side. How fast can you turn a house? If you're doing your 3-bed, 2-bath, cookie cutter, basic house, how fast does a team turn that for you now?
So if it's like a rental turn, paint, floors, countertops, I mean, we get that done in a week or 2 weeks. I mean, it's fast. I mean, we can turn those pretty quick.
Yeah.
Full cosmetic rehab, 3-4 weeks, 4 weeks probably. We just did a full gut rehab down to the studs, 100-year-old house for a little over 2 months. So I've got guys, I've got systems. I got a project manager that's hitting the boots on the ground every day. Specific material. So like, we break it into two things. So like, I'm talking like in full rehab. It's not really as much turns. I got our builder grade and more of a high end. High end for us, we don't do high end, but it's just nicer. And the materials are ordered. We have virtual assistants that'll have the stuff ready for us when we close. We just build our scope. It's all built out. We order it. It's sitting at our warehouse. When the contractors need it, they come and get it. So contractors have less time in Lowe's. We're not chasing down receipts. We have everything dialed into where like all you guys need to be doing is working. So work, work, work. Manage your sites, and that's all we need from you guys. And that's really, really streamlined the timelines on these projects.
Who does the streamlining part? And you said that you are a fantastic leader and you're not the detail-oriented one. Everything you've described to me is a very detail-oriented business. Is that your other business partner? Is there a key employee? How do you be the visionary and integrate well? Because that sounds like what you've done.
Yeah, my business partner, he's more of a systems and operations guy. Not that he's like naturally that great at it, he'll say that. He just knows that it's a super necessity in these businesses, especially if you want to scale them. So he has dreams of like going and being able to work from Florida for a couple months out of the year and just like turn it, not even turn it off, but go and do it wherever. And the only way to do that is build systems and build processes to where, and then pop a person in that system to make sure it runs well. And also, when you do that, giving them the autonomy to make decisions. So, if you're a micromanager, even if you have an amazing system, if you micromanage that system, they're never going to be able to do it properly because they're not have like they're people. They need to grow as well. They need to be able to make failures and learn from their failures too, even if it costs you the business owner money. So every person in our business, no matter what role they're in, we give them autonomy to make decisions and we train them to be like, hey, like I'm an acquisition guy. I'll tell you, like they know this. If they feel super strongly about a deal, even if my underwriting's a little bit different and they both agree on it, I will buy that deal and I will potentially lose money on that house because that's the only way everybody learns in this business.
Something we say all the time, I don't need you to make the right decision. I need you to make a decision. That is every leader in my company, every leadership role. It's like I do not want to have to make a decision for you. Don't just come up with problems and be like, oh, I don't know what to do. You are allowed to make mistakes in every one of my companies. You're not allowed to make the same mistake multiple times, but you're allowed to make mistakes and you're encouraged. I prefer the decision being made over we didn't know what to do, so we didn't make a decision. Inaction to me is the worst decision. That is, in my companies, that's the way you get fired as a manager. I need everyone who is in a position of power in any capacity just to have the ability to say, I am going to make a decision and I'm going to stick by my reasoning for the decision, whether it's right or wrong. And if you can do that for me, you're going to do fantastic in any of my companies. Very consistent. If you micromanage people, what you're going to find is you can't expand because your bottleneck is always going to be you.
That's phenomenal stuff. I
That's
love that.
fantastic. If you had to leave an audience with one thing, let's say for people who are either getting started on their real estate journey or who are stuck trying to scale to where you're at today, what piece of advice would you give that person?
So, I mean, for the person that's getting started, I mean, let's say you got the real estate bug. It's really, really hard. Everybody knows what that bug is. You've heard about it. You've learned about it. You're like, okay, this is it. This is my out of what I'm in right now. Never lose that feeling. Never lose that feeling because the end, it is very real, but it is hard as hell to get started. So you need to take consistent action every single day and don't let that faith go away because you'll feel like you're not gaining ground day over day. Look in 90-day chunks. Look back and be like, okay, what did I accomplish? And as time goes on, I guarantee it will come true. It just takes longer than you think it's going to take.
Love it. And that's absolutely true. That first deal is usually the longest amount of time. It's usually the hardest. It's almost never going to be the best deal that you do in your career. It's going to get you in. Buy that first property, and the day that you close on it is the day you become a real estate investor. And I think a lot of people forget to do that step. People are like, oh, I want to be a real estate investor, and then they go 5 years without buying anything. All you have to do to be a real estate investor is close on a piece of property. And your target, in my mind, is it needs to cash flow. Long-term cash flowing, fixed rate debt, buy something that pays you to own it. And if you accomplish that, congratulations, you are in the game. Your next deal will be easier and faster, and you will get better and better and better. But it does not start until you close that deal, regardless of the size. Single family, fourplex, 50-unit building. I probably wouldn't start with 100. I'd recommend against that. Your stupid tax is going to be magnified 100-fold if you do that.
100%.
But get started. Buy something. Get a foot in the door. I love the advice, man. All right. We know you're on social media. I think we've all seen you come across our feed at some point. Where does someone find you online? Talk to me about, give me all of it. Your systems, Instagram, where do we find you? Do you coach people? Give us the rundown.
Yeah. So the best way to communicate with me on a day-to-day basis is Instagram, TommyHar05. I just launched YouTube probably 2 months ago too. So if you want longer form content, we're giving out some really, really cool stuff for free there. And then we launched the Real Side of Real Estate community about a year ago now. We've got about 200 people across the country that are coming together learning as a community. I learn from them just as much as they learn from me and my team. So if you want access to me and my team on a daily basis, you want to learn how to flip, you want to learn how to wholesale, the burn method will be coming soon, but right now it's flipping and wholesaling. Shoot me a DM. I'd love to get on a phone call with you. I don't send you to another team member. I want to get to know everybody that comes into my community, because once you're in my community, you're part of my family. So would love to help anybody that I possibly can.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Tommy, thank you for joining us on this episode of Multifamily Strategy. By the way, it is now a podcast. We're not just on YouTube. We're on basically everything that you could possibly view podcasts on. So check it out, Multifamily Strategy. Download, get us started, subscribe to the podcast, because that helps us get the word out to more people. Tommy, thank you for joining us. We'll see you all on the next episode.